AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. We are sprinting into the end of the week here on AgriTalk. The free-for-all is ready to roll. We are going to talk planting delays, jobs data, the economy, energy prices, the weather outlook, and we will revisit what one panelist has described as the administration's curious attempt to boost production of wheat and soybeans.
Live from the weekly conversation culmination via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all with panelists Sean Haney, Roger Bernard, and Chris Gibbs. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheck from Farm Journal's Pork Eye. Well, I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you very much. And welcome, welcome, everyone, to the free-for-all here at the end of the week.
Yes.
Really looking forward to the conversation with Sean, Chris, and Roger coming up here in just a little bit. But first, I've got a special birthday shout-out, all right?
Birthday shout-out?
So if today is your birthday, pay attention. It could be you. You don't know. You just don't know. Happy birthday to loyal AgriTalk listener and longtime agronomist, Jay Zilski. Happy birthday, Jay. I hope you have a great day and get out in the field, man. Yeah, the birthday trumpet.
Whee! Little birthday toot. Little birthday toot. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening so much. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Jay. All right. You know, we've got so much ground that we're going to cover in today's show. And I feel like the whole, we're going to have to talk at least briefly about the leak of the document from the Supreme Court. I know that it is not ag related. Okay. I get that, but I just want to get the guy's take on what it means for where we are as a republic, as a country.
Sure.
When stuff like, I felt compelled to talk about it the other day on the Farmer Forum with Gary and Kenny, and it I feel like we need to get everybody's take on it here as well, just because it's going to be a very, very hot topic in the days and now weeks ahead. It leading right up to the elections this fall.
Yes.
So it's a turning point is what I would call it. It is a turning point, and I want to discuss that. All right, let's get to the news. What you got, man?
Well, Chip, according to data released this morning by the Labor Department, the U.S. added back another 428,000 jobs in April, performing better than the roughly 400,000 new jobs economists had forecast. Growth was widespread, led by gains in leisure, manufacturing, transportation, and warehousing, the government said. The unemployment rate remained flat at 3.6%, but that is close to a pre-pandemic rate of 3.5% in Feb 2020, when unemployment was hovering at its lowest level since 1969. Chip, non-farm productivity, however, dropped at the sharpest pace in 74 years, according to the Labor Department. This as economic output declined and hours worked climbed. Unit labor costs, meanwhile, jumped at an 11.6% pace.
This is one of the things that we talked about yesterday when we were talking about that question. With everything priced so high, how do high prices cure high prices? You've got to get your gains in productivity back. And this is a kind of a shocking number that we got on the productivity.
Well, Freddie Mac reports the average rate for a 30-year fixed-rate home loan rose to 5.27% from 5.1% just a week earlier. That marked the weekly figure's highest reading in nearly 13 years. The average rate on America's most popular home loan was 3.22% in early January and 2.96% a year ago. Chip, mortgage rates continue to rise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to start to slow things down a little bit in the housing market.
Well, the American Soybean Association suggests the Biden administration's proposal to incentivize double cropping of soybeans after winter wheat in 2023 would not appear to have a significant impact. The group also said that the higher loan rates would not be used for calculating payments under either the Ag Risk Coverage and Price Loss Coverage programs, leaving those safety net programs unchanged.
Yep, yeah, we're going to talk about that analysis. I know that Chris wants to get into it some, so we will.
Western ports are bracing for increased congestion when China eventually lifts stringent COVID-19 restrictions in major cities, which could come just as many importers start to load up for the back-to-school and holiday shopping seasons. Import gateways such as California's Los Angeles and Long Beach ports are still inundated with uncollected cargo. The cost to move one container from China to the west coast of the U.S. about twice the price of a year ago, hovering right around $12,600.
Yeah, it's amazing. If they cut all those boats loose at one time, order the people back to work, the dock workers back to work, get those boats unloaded as fast as they can and cut them loose, reload them and cut them loose back to the U.S., oh my gosh, we're just going to get swamped.
Well, China's government ordered its agencies and state-backed companies to get rid of all personal computers from foreign brands within the next 2 years. They must be replaced with domestically produced alternatives running their own operating systems. In other news, USDA now indicates 171 commercial flocks have been confirmed with highly pathogenic avian influenza. And on Tuesday, New York City Health Commissioner Ashwin Vasan spoke about the recent rise in COVID cases, particularly those affected by the BA2 subvariant of Omicron. If the trend is left unaddressed, he said, the city may have no choice but to bring back the mask mandate. Chip.
Oh, wow. All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Appreciate it. Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal Sport. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
All right. So are you getting ready for the World Pork Expo?
I am. It's one of the highlights of my year. Looking forward to it.
All right. So when you head down there, let's get into some of the details. When is it? Who's going to be there? What's going on?
Well, the event's going to take place June 8th through the 10th at the Iowa State Fairgrounds in Des Moines. And it's really the place where people from all over the industry join together to learn about important topics. But also, I just finished up a story that's going to be in our next issue of Pork Magazine. And everybody agrees that the number one reason that they go is networking and just those casual interactions with people in the industry, learning about new ideas and new technologies as they go through the
training. Hey, Joe, do you just have us muted?
Yep. Hey, not yet, Sean. Hey, welcome to the show, Sean.
Hi, Sean. Wow. Making a splash on the entrance there, buddy.
Sorry, Jennifer. Let's get back to...
That's okay. We're networking. Yeah. We're networking.
That's right.
No, but that's really, you know, and also, like, you can't deny that the barbecue is the best. And so there's tons of great opportunities to eat pork too. So it's just a really fun activity for everybody to take part in. And I can't wait to go.
Yeah. Excellent. And you know, it's so important for that networking just simply because of all the management techniques, the disease prevention, it all comes together, and this is where the brightest and sharpest ideas are shared. Jennifer, I'm looking forward to it as well. Thanks. We'll talk to you again next week.
Later.
All right. That is Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. She'll have coverage of the World Pork Expo, of course, at www.porkbusiness.com. We got the we've already kind of started the free-for-all. We'll keep it going next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest,
Timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
AgriTalk is brought to you by United Animal Health, where their science allows you to maximize your genetic potential. Learn more at unitedanh.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. It's time for the free-for-all, and let's bring in today's panel. We've got Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Welcome, Sean.
You know, it's possible that while we could hear Sean, he was hearing us. He says
now we don't have him.
He's
no,
here.
I think we've got him. Hey, welcome, Sean Haney. How are you?
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I'll work to that. Why don't you welcome the other two fellas in?
All right, yeah, we'll do that. Chris Gibbs, Ohio farmer and chair of Rural Voices USA. Chris, welcome back to the free for all.
Hey, I can hear you loud and clear. We're doing
beautiful.
Well.
Beautiful. Okay. Before we get Roger and Sean in here, let's get an update on your conditions over there in Ohio, buddy.
Well, tell you what, we're wet. Tiles are running. I mudded in a couple strings this last week. Just lucky there was one day to do that. And they're running hard this morning. We haven't turned a wheel here except for some of those, you know, really well-drained soils, maybe some gravel underneath them. And you know those townships, everybody's got them where the everything's right. You can put corn in a fertilizer spreader and spread it out and hell, plants itself and get some 30-inch rows, you know. But I don't have that. Everybody's got those townships. I'm 100% no-till. We haven't turned a wheel. And I was told somebody this morning that 50% of my calves that are on the ground have not seen sun. And I'm not lying. They have not seen the sun. 50% of them spring calves. So we'll dig out. I've seen this movie before. I didn't like it when I saw it, but the ending worked out okay.
Well, and you mentioned a year specifically in your notes before the show here, Chris, 2019 was a dreadful year for you guys.
Oh yeah, it was. We didn't, you know, I didn't get in the field to, you know, talk about not turning a wheel. We planted corn the first week of June, and I had great corn. I'm knocking on wood here, right? You know, we're not to that point yet, so let's not throw out the baby with the bath water.
Sure.
But it's hard to sit and watch. But we'll get it done. I've been farming in 44 years, and I always got it planted. So.
Right. So, how much gas did you have to burn up to dry that 2019 corn crop?
I did burn up a lot of gas, and I'm glad it was actually somewhat cheaper then than it is now. And what, having corn in the bin to dry, in my view, is always better than not having corn in the bin and not spending any money drying it.
Right. Excellent. Okay. Let's bring in Roger Bernard, Senior Policy Analyst, Agribusiness Intelligence, IHS Market, and now S&P Global Platts. Good grief, Roger. Is anything else to add to that title? Oh, I don't think Roger's hearing us yet.
Perhaps mime. Add mime to the title.
He was muted. No, I'm not miming. Sorry.
He's stuck in an invisible box.
That's right. Help me. I've fallen and I can't get up. There's no other additions to my title at this point. So.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Hey, I'm going to start with you, Roger. I want to start on that leaked document from the Supreme Court of the United States.
The
topic is irrelevant to me. It's the simple fact that this document was leaked that it sickens me. It's a turning point for the country, if you ask me, that this happened.
Yeah, this is, you know, well, it's unprecedented for one. You know, you've not seen something like this happen. The fact that it was, the authenticity was verified abide by the Supreme Court, you know, and there's going to be an investigation. You get these anytime you get this type of a leak that goes on. And it was either a, you know, disgruntled staffer or, you know, heaven forbid, one of the justices that wasn't happy with where they saw, you know, this initial draft that goes back to February, mind you, you know. This is just one of those deals that is, it's very hard to believe, number one, that it happened. And, you know, it just, it's damaging for the court because it calls into their, you know, the integrity there right away.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of upsets the apple cart on the whole process. And
absolutely,
we don't need that. We don't need that.
Chris, what about you? What's your take on this?
Yeah, I probably got a little different take. You know, this is over the last five or six years, we've seen quite a devolution, if you will, of our institutions. They've been hurt and beat up on pretty good. And now we're all the way up to the Supreme Court, where we have difficulties there. You know, I want to push back just a little bit on you, my friend Chip.
Okay.
I think the topic is of extreme importance. I believe that the leak itself will work itself out. The Roberts will look into that. There'll be an investigation, yada, yada, yada. But I think that's a little bit of a look at this shiny object over here. Okay. In my view, the topic is what's important. This is going to energize the Democratic base, that part of the electorate. And we have probably seen a sea change in how these midterm elections are going to go.
Okay. Well, okay, Roe versus Wade. And we're hearing now, Roger, check me on this, but Schumer says that there is going to be a vote in the Senate next week to codify Roe versus Wade.
Yeah, they're gonna try to do that. I'm not sure exactly how that's going to go. Because you're not going to get a lot of extra support for it. But this is going to be one of those interesting votes coming up in the U.S. Senate that is going to have a lot of, you know, potential influence here. And I do think this does inject something else into these midterm elections you know, this is an October surprise that arrived in April.
Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's not going to pass. That's not going to pass.
No. It'll be
a symbolic vote. I get that.
Yeah.
It's a stand up and be counted. Stand up and be counted. Now we know where you're at, and now we can campaign on that issue because we know where you are.
Yeah.
Right.
This is next time, Chip. You need Mr. Wasserman on here again to get his take.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
As far as the potential electoral significance of this.
Right.
Let's call this a developing story. Developing
yeah,
story.
There you it certainly go. Is. It certainly is. Okay. Mr. Haney, Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Are you here yet?
Better late than never, Chip, I guess. Sorry about that. I apologize. But I am here on this Friday, ready to go.
Good deal. Good deal. How are things up your way? Have you gotten any relief?
Where I am, no, it's still bone dry. It's terrible. Seeding is pretty much completed on those pulse crops and spring wheat and canola, things like that around here. But, you know, as you've probably seen, Chip, you know, north of North Dakota into Manitoba, boy, they sure had a lot of rain and wet conditions. So the Western prairies have turned into a real mixed bag.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's move on to this topic. Chris, I love the way that you describe it. The administration's curious attempt to boost the production of wheat and beans after wheat. The American Soybean Association, very, very detailed analysis of what it would do and what it might do. And the bottom line is it's probably not going to do much. That was our take last week. Chris, what's your take?
Yeah, and I apologize. You know, you guys probably already licked this calf, but I fully agree with what the Soybean Association said. I'm not sure this is going to have an impact. When I first heard this, and I said it was curious, you know, I hearken back, you know, as a farm policy individual that likes farm policy, I go all the way back to 1936 through 1996, where we tried to limit production. And then I also overlay that with the mid-70s, where we tried to increase production under Earl Butz in the Nixon administration, and that didn't work out very well. It's always an odd situation when we get a government that tries to either limit or now boost production. Just a very, very odd thing. And I always go back to the market can handle this. And I explained this to you guys, you know, a month ago, maybe the last time I was on. The only reason I'm growing wheat now this year is because of I'm reacting to the market.
Okay. Yeah.
So if we want more of something, we incentivize it with the market, and the market will take care of this. So it's kind of a curious thing. I see what they're doing. The FSA administrator was out kind of supporting this policy, saying that, you know, we don't know where prices are going to go. Possibly in 23, they're going to go down again. And we want to make sure we've got incentives out there so folks don't abandon conservation programs.
Right.
And they've got the money to do both. So
gotcha.
Arguments on both sides, but certainly curious policy.
All right. Good stuff. Good stuff. We are off and running. We'll get Sean engaged in the conversation when we come back. We're going to continue on. We've got Sean Haney, Chris Gibbs, and Roger Bernard right here on AgriTalk.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady Beach. We've got corn and soybean markets under some pressure again. On a weekly basis, corn's working on some losses for the first time in a while.
Yeah, kind of rolled over here, Chip, and seen some liquidation pressure and profit taking, things like that. Probably not too much of a surprise. New crop contracts are leading us down. The weather picture for next week is by far the best that we've had so far this spring for planting. So if that materializes, we should see a fairly rapid increase in planting pace in some of these areas. I know farmers are out there. They're anxious to go. So if they're ready and soil conditions are right, they'll put in quite a bit of corn next week.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We've got all three of the markets in the soy complex moving in the same direction this morning. What's happening there?
Yeah, I think that's the key. Palm oil is putting some pressure on the soy oil market,
okay.
and that's kind of spilling over into the other two. Now, the meal market has weakened here recently, and so just that general weaker tone has kind of pulled down soybeans through the week. Broad-based selling, although it's not active, broad-based selling right across the soy complex.
Yep, we've got hard red winter wheat about a nickel higher, spring wheat about a nickel higher. We've got soft red leading the way up 14, 15 cents there. Take us over to the livestock trade, Beach.
Well, mixed tone in the cattle market. Not too much of a surprise given the weakness in corn. We're seeing strength in feeder cattle, but just isn't translating to any buyer interest so far anyway in the live cattle market. And then on hogs, facing some pretty heavy pressure through the summer month contracts there.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Brian. Hey, thanks. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now. Players, put your pinky rings up to the moon.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us here on this Friday morning. We've got Sean Haney, Roger Bernard, and Chris Gibbs, part of the free-for-all today. Haney, I thought it was funny that this week we both felt the need to talk with some experts about what's going on in this diesel market. I had Phil Flynn from the Price Futures Group on yesterday. You had a conversation with Patrick DeHaan from Gas Buddy. And I think we had it for the same reason. I think both you and I are thinking, okay, there's got to be a reason out there. There's got to be something out there that is signaling that we're going to put a top in the market. But I couldn't find it.
Yeah. Same feeling right here. I got the same indication from Patrick DeHaan from Gas Buddy that, and also the fact, Chip, that it's kind of snuck up on everybody. Like, there was so much talk about all the input price escalation, you know, through the winter months here. And this is one that it's like, boom, it's here and demand is strong. And when you think about construction and agriculture, you let them, you know, that demand is there. But also for, you know, things like vehicles pulling RVs, the price escalation doesn't look like it's going to deter people because there's so much pent up demand for people to get out and about post COVID. Yeah. So also exports, one of the things that Patrick talked about too, is exports out of the US, very, very strong. And I guess producers can try to manage some of their risk on the price escalation of diesel by looking at that heating oil market. Right. If you're so inclined, but I don't know where the top is right now.
Right. What kind of an impact is it having on you out there, Chris?
Well, you know, I talked to Joe about this yesterday, and he asked me if I needed any more black swans, and I said no, I've got plenty in my pond. But he made the case that are we going to have supply shortages once we hit the fields. I have not heard that, and that kind of spooked me just a little bit. My supplier says that we're gonna be fine. For myself, I've got enough. I'm all no tills, so I've got enough fuel here to get through the crop. But it looks like we're going higher. It looks like we're going higher, and that, you know, through the summer, I've got dozer work to do, and that's going to hurt those projects.
Right. Healthy margins right now for refiners, Chip.
You know, oh yeah.
We, you know, pre-COVID, looking at like 19 million barrels a day of refining capacity, we're down to like 17.8. And those margins are healthy for them right now as the middle guy.
Well, and Haney, like DeHaan, the point that DeHaan made in your interview with him was there's so much of the demand base for diesel is it's inelastic. They got to have it to run the construction equipment, to run the trucks up and down the road. I guess it would get to a point where you would just say, no, I'm not going to buy it, but I have no idea where that point is.
Yeah. And that inelastic demand, you know, you think about construction and, you know, infrastructure projects, and there's a big push for that right now. Right. And so, yeah, it was a couple of weeks ago, I think, here on the Free For All, we talked about how, you know, you put aside a pot of money for infrastructure projects, and that pot of money is actually today smaller than when some of that money was passed because we've had so much escalation in some of the materials and things like fuel.
Right, right. Absolutely. Okay, the Fed raised interest rates earlier this week by half a point, biggest jump in 22 years in interest rates. The equities trade at first responded with a negative. There was a short negative response, and then the big rally, just a rip your face off rally in that in equities on Wednesday, and then Thursday dumped it all plus some. Today we were more than 400 points lower after the jobs report, Roger, and we've made a decent comeback. We're less than 200 points lower in the Dow now, but boy, the reaction from the marketplace out there, and it has been pretty remarkable, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, that first day big jump of 900 in the Dow came, you know, from one comment Powell made. we're not considering a 75 basis point increase. That was the key. Everybody went, oh, thank goodness. Then they woke up Thursday morning and went, wait a minute. He did say half basis point increases are on the schedule if things unfold as we expect for the next couple meetings. And you know what couple means? That's two. You know, so you're getting closer to, fall here. And we're looking at the potential for a full percentage point hike in rates. As your news update said at the start of the hour, you know, I think this is already curtailing, already impacting housing, because I think you had people make a rush to get in before, the mortgage rates went out of bounds. I think now you're going to see a lot of people start locking in some of those variable rates that they might have. You're going to see a lot, this is going to impact a lot of activity coming up. And the other one that's going to give us a clue is the consumer credit data this afternoon. Yep. Even though it's March, it's still, consumers use these to make big purchases, and they hadn't been doing it a lot during the pandemic, but now they're starting to pull the plastic out and use it.
Yep. Hey, Chris, one of the things that makes this unique, in my opinion, I mean, I see the inflation. Obviously, I see the inflation. But we had negative GDP in the first quarter of 2022, and we are raising interest rates. Doesn't that feel strange to you?
Yeah, it certainly feels strange. But it hits home right here on the farm. You know, I'll get a letter probably today, and I'll go out to the mail from Farm Credit, and they will have raised my operating loan rate. Those rates go up immediate. So that's an immediate thing for me. My mortgages are 5-year variables, so I can probably ride it out just a little bit. But this is going to make a real difference. And I think the market finally realized that Powell was serious. And I appreciate what Roger said. He didn't say 75, but he said, we'll do a bunch of 50s, and then we'll get to Jackson Hole, and then we may come out and do another 50. So 50, 50, 50, 50 adds up to a hell of a lot more than 75.
Yeah.
So
Powell buried the lead, essentially, is what he did there. And if you compare it to, the Bank of Canada takes a lot of indication from the Federal Reserve, not direction, but there's, the two economies are very closely attached, and they've been sounding much more hawkish. Tiff Macklin, the Bank of Canada governor, has talked about he wouldn't rule it out going more than a 50. I guess, Chip, it's the same thing. We had the same discussion on the downside as the pandemic started. Are they going too fast, too quickly, too much to the downside? Are they panicking? And now we're having that same conversation as we try to get back to those pre-COVID-19 levels when it comes to interest rates. But with farmers having so much borrowed, like Chris, just mentioned, that this is where rubber kind of hits the road from a cost standpoint.
Right.
And operating loans are increasing, by the way. And those are right at direct rates. Every 50% up or 50 points is 50 points on an operating loan. So an operating loans are increasing. The Fed just released that guys aren't stopping spending money because prices have increased. And so they're going back to the bank for more operating capital. And that is directly related to the higher costs that they're going to pay because of these interest rates.
Right. Yeah. And this almost really takes us back to where you started with Chris, this proposal to raise the loan rates. The farmers that I've talked to around here, number one, they don't even remember how the marketing assistance loan works now. Right. Of what can they do with it, because they haven't had to use it in so long. I mean, this isn't the bad old days of the 70s and early 80s when we had billions of bushels going under loan every year.
Right.
What a great segue into that, because here's a chance, and let's let our viewer or listeners know this. What a chance if they raise the soybean rate to $8, that's real cash flow money at 2% or 2.25, whatever it's going to be this fall from the treasury rate. That's real cheap money that guys can get to buy those inputs for 23. So it's possible that actually the administration looked a little bit forward here, and that's what they're trying to do. If that's the case, A plus.
Yeah, that's exactly the conversation that I've been having is that was the thought behind it. The problem is $15 new crop beans. Isn't that enough incentive? $12 wheat. Isn't that enough incentive to do everything that you can to grow?
You would certainly think so.
No, okay, to grow, but not to market. There's a difference between growing and a difference between marketing. I put everything in the bin because I'm not going to take a 40, 50, 60, 78 cents beating on basis. I'm going to let my bins do that, and I'll move stuff out in March of the following year. And that's why I use a commodity loan program faithfully to get my cash flow for the fall.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Yep. I mean, it's a very workable plan from that regard. But Roger, now we've got, I don't want to say USDA policy, but we've got federal policy influencing acreage decisions, and Canada and Brazil are going to be all over us.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That'll happen. But I think the muted, you know, because, you know, again, I've talked to a couple, you know, more than a few farmers around here in North Central Iowa, and they're kind of looking at it like, you know, say if I got 200 bushel corn on an acre of ground, I can get a new crop bid today at 712. This was three, four days ago. That's $1,422 an acre. In order to get that gross revenue out of that same acre of soybeans, that soybean price has got to be closing in. If we got 60 bushel beans, that soybean price got to close in on $24 an acre.
Right.
So just to get that gross dollar per acre number.
Right.
He says, you know, obviously that's not going to happen. And you're already at 2.75% interest on those commodity loan rates in May. And it ain't going down, especially if we get, you know, 250 basis point hikes. You're looking at something closing in on 4% by the time you put the combine through the field.
Yep. Yep. All right. Hey, I can't, that one segment went really, really fast there. We got to come back and wrap things up. It's the free-for-all right here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's May 17th online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypete.com.
Welcome back. We are into the home stretch. Sean Haney, Rural Agriculture. Chris Gibbs, Ohio farmer and chair of Rural Voices USA. And Roger Bernard, senior policy analyst, IHS Market. Guys, first off, Haney, you made a great point there during the break as we were listening to the report on Lely Robotics in the dairy parlor. Labor issues. We had the jobs report out this morning. Participation rate went down. It just seems like there's more and more interest in automation in agriculture.
Yeah, absolutely. And as that supply continues to shrink and shrink and shrink, especially on the kind of work specific to dairies that we're looking for, you know, if you look at the implementation of robotic milkers in places like Canada, it's been a high rate, much higher than the U.S. The U.S., you know, and part of that is to do with the size of the scale of the U.S. dairy industry. As those robot systems have gotten bigger and bigger, higher capacity. I think this is something we're going to see a lot more of, because this is one way that you combat the lack of labor supply is by, and the other part of that, Chip, is it's also the data component. It's not just about the milking of the cows, but it's the data and the better understanding you have of the output of those cows that you get from those robots.
Right, right. It's like a kiosk at McDonald's. And entering your order there.
I will not use them. I will not use them. I stand there until they come and see me.
The self-checkout at the grocery store.
Yeah, absolutely.
all those lines are there and they're empty. And there's no cash registers around, but you can go check yourself out. It's changing, changing world. Roger Bernard, there was a USDA report issued from the chief economist's office this week called Assessing Future Market Opportunities and Challenges for E15 and Higher Ethanol Blends. What was your take?
Well, I think they lay out pretty much what everybody knows. You know, there's going to be challenges, limitations on getting E15 more broadly. When you've got 2,300 fuel stations across the country out of, 120,000, that's all that can handle it. It's awfully hard to get it to spread beyond that. Now, I did just hear, you know, recently, here's another little interesting marketing thing that's going on in Minnesota. They're talking about 88 octane fuel, which is E15, but they're not mentioning that it's E15.
Right.
They're just saying it's 88 octane fuel. Yeah, it's better for the environment. You get this. It's cheaper, you know, because of the ethanol component, but they don't mention that. So hey, maybe that's the way you start to get some pressure on outlets to do that. But this whole thing of converting over, you know, storage facilities, the fuel handling devices themselves, that's a chunk of money. And without it being there year round, that's not an investment that these fuel stations are willing to make in most of these markets.
One of the biggest conclusions in there was that the current, and I'm stressing this, the current RFS does not incentivize the market to go beyond E10.
Right.
The current RFS. Now, if the RFS did have year-around permanent availability of E15 to work with, then it would incentivize more ethanol use. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because so you it's would outdated. Get that. In other words, the RFS has become outdated. And when, I mean, if EPA Administrator Michael Regan sticks with what he told us last week, I think he's going to use this report as the basis for a decision to move toward E15 instead of E10 in the RFS reset. Your thought?
They were real careful in this this decision to allow it this summer. They didn't do it blanket across the country. It's every 20 days. It's got to be renewed, even though they even said, look, we're going to renew it every 20 days, folks.
Right.
You know, they're kind of setting the stage for, okay, we might be able to get this through not going broad, but they're going to have to get different lawyers if they're going to do it nationwide. You know, to throw it open across the country. And we've seen that can happen. You just find lawyers that'll tell you that.
Yeah, my take, you know, I want to make sure that I'm consistent here. I was very wary of the administration creating incentives to increase production for wheat and soybeans. But if we're going to use the government, this is where we need to do that. The market can handle the wheat and soybean issue, but incentives for increasing and ethanol fuel, this is the right place for those incentives. And if they can make those incentives so that we can use that E15 year round, regardless of the relative vapor pressure issues and all of that, if we can use that, then we'll have an increased usage and it'll be good for agriculture and it'll be good for the environment.
Yeah. Yep. Haney, what's the status? What do you think of this?
The fight goes on. And I just continue to think about the challenge for corn-based ethanol is going to be to try to keep its position and focus as all of the hype around sustainable aviation fuel and renewable diesel rages on. And just always remember the White House may not think about all biofuels equally going forward. And that's going to be, I think, a real challenge for corn-based ethanol to continue to be a big part of that discussion.
Yeah.
The E15 issue, they cycled back just because of pressure, like a lot of us putting on the White House. They had already gone forward and passed over ethanol, but they did cycle back with the E15 issue and the president being in Iowa. So,
for now. All right. One last thing, and Roger, we're going to have to cover this really quick. Is the U.S. going to pull some tariffs off Chinese goods?
I don't think we're going to get there real soon. If we do, because this is going to be a process. Ty isn't tipping her hand this time. She's backing away from the inflation argument. Well, she's backing away from the argument that she needs to keep leverage on China. That tells me somewhere in the administration, they're telling her, you might want to just not be as forceful on keeping leverage on China. Let's see what happens.
Right, right. All right, all right. Well, Chris, I hope you get some sun and those calves get some sun on their backs. They're going to love it when they do.
We're going to do her. We're going to do
her.
All right.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thank you for making time for us today, buddy. Appreciate you. Sean Haney, thanks, man.
Everybody have themselves a great weekend. Cheers.
Yeah. All right. We will. Roger, thank you, buddy.
That's right. And be safe, y'all, out in the field. You need to go hammering away at her.
You bet. All right. Hey, thanks for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. Mark Hobrock from the Andersons, right here on AgriTalk.